Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
To take I-535 to Superior, you will reach your destination in 2 to 3 years.
What's the latest on the can of worms reconstruction? And how exactly are you supposed to drive from I-35 to Superior?
Well, I can tell you, on Garfield Avenue right now, the traffic volumes are up by a factor of 3.
We'll talk to a MnDOT project manager. Plus, they're a couple making beautiful music together, and it's all about nature and the outdoors. We'll catch up with Tom and Deborah King and Hallbjorn. Those stories and a regional news and review after this.
There's a trail up north called Degerman Road. Winter days are cold on Degerman Road.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
To take the reconstructed I-535 roadway to Superior, you will reach your destination in 1 to 2 years.
What's the latest on the can of worms reconstruction? And how exactly are you supposed to drive from I-35 to Superior?
Well, I can tell you, on Garfield Avenue right now, the traffic volumes are up by a factor of 3.
We'll talk to a MnDOT project manager. Plus, they're a couple making beautiful music together, and it's all about nature and the outdoors. We'll catch up with Tom and Deborah King and Hallbjorn.
There's a trail up north called Degerman Road. Winter days are cold on Degerman Road. And when the north wind blows, that is where a lost soul goes. There is fear upon the snows down Degerman Road.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. You probably knew it for years as the can of worms. And if you looked recently for the interchange of Interstate 35 and 535 connecting Duluth to Superior, it isn't there, or it isn't completely there. It's being rebuilt in a massive reconstruction that not only is designed to replace aging infrastructure, but to eliminate blind merges and those pesky left exits that made for hazardous driving and no end of accidents since it was built in the 1970s, as well as to better accommodate freight movements in the area next to the Clure Public Terminal. There's also the connection to Route 53 to the Miller Hill Mall in Duluth and beyond to the Iron Range, which included a notorious stoplight at the top of the interchange. That's being updated to, well, okay, you need an expert to tell you that, and we have one. Pat Houston is a major projects engineer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and he joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Pat.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So the first and most important question is, when is it going to be done?
Woof, duh. That's a tough question. Let's hold that till the end because there's more to that story. I'll say part of it in 2024, part of it in 2025. But there's three components, and as we get into the kind of meat and potatoes, I'll tell you about that.
Fair enough. And before we worry about when it is going to be done, we should probably talk about it, right? So what will be different? Basically, we have traffic going north and south on I-35. And then, as I said, the I-535 interchange to Superior and US 53 to the range. So are all of those still going to be there?
Well, before we talk about what's going to be different, let's talk about what's going to be the same. So I think you nailed it on your introduction. But I did pick up on the stoplight, and that is something we hear about often. So that was kind of an infamous stoplight, but during public outreach, probably 1 out of 10 people always ask, you're not putting that crazy stoplight back, are you? So I always ask, well, what's wrong with it? And they say, well, it's a stoplight on the interstate, to which I always say, well, actually, it's not a stoplight on the interstate. So what I mean by that is, at any given interchange, let's take Hinckley, it's State Highway 48. Mm-hmm. When you pull off there to get gas or grab a caramel roll from Covey's, what's at the top of the ramp? It's a stoplight, right?
Yep.
So the old stoplight there, that was a ramp to Highway 53, which is not an interstate. But the thing that made it so peculiar was the left exit and the fact that, you know, the light was kind of up over the interstate. So I'm here to say there will be a light going back in there, but it will be much different, and it will be a right exit mm-hmm. to a state highway.
Okay. So wait, the right exit, do I understand, would not be stopping? The stop is when you're making a left there?
Yeah. So as you picture coming north on I-35 towards Duluth, and rather than making that left exit like it used to be, there will be a right exit mm-hmm. to what in engineering jargon is called a green T intersection. In plain terms, it basically you'll go from a one lane right exit, and then you'll have a choice to take. It'll kind of split the two lanes. The rightmost lane will continue uninterrupted with no signal system and continue on to 535 towards Superior.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to turn left and go up Highway 53 or Piedmont Avenue towards the mall, there will be a signal there. And so for those of your listeners that happen to get over on the Minnesota side of the bridge and go up County Highway number 4, also known as the Rice Lake Road, towards the Duluth landfill and the Martin Road, there's a very similar system at the Airport Road intersection there. So if you're going up to the landfill, you never have to stop if you keep going straight ahead. But if you need to take a left on Airport Road and get over to Haines Road or the airport, you may have to stop if the signal is red.
Mm-hmm.
So well, they work very well. It's very efficient.
All right. Before we get that far, if we're coming over the bridge at Blatnick from Superior, and we are passing over 35 and continuing on Route 53, is there a stop? Was there a stoplight there? My memory is getting clouded. But so yes, would you just go continuously from 535 to 53 up to the range, or would
yes.
you stop there?
You could go continuously, but there was one of those blind merges. So I didn't mean to dodge your last question, but maybe we can. I'm looking at a layout in my office. Would you like me to walk through what will be different as I look at this layout?
Absolutely. For the radio, this is the best we can do. So walk us through.
All right. Let's talk about I-35 first. So I-35 prior to this project was all on low-level bridges. And the reason it was all on low-level bridges, this was an industrial area. It was all in the rail yard, partially filled in areas of the bay, and the soil is really soft. So we needed deep steel supports to support basically a bridge. And back when this was built, we don't have the technology that we have today. So the first big change is I-35, all those bridges will be gone. And what we're doing there is putting in what we call ground improvements, because if we just piled up a bunch of fill, it would sink and the roadway would not be desirable. So it's supported down on the harder layer out of sight.
Mm-hmm.
So picture it almost like a causeway. I-35 will be like a causeway through here on a normal pavement section on fill inside of retaining walls. So that's a big difference. Long term, it's much better if you can avoid having bridges. They get slippery up here in northwestern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, right? Because they get the cold air underneath them. They're expensive to maintain. They have a lot of components. So that will be a significant change. I'm going to kind of take you from a trip now on I-35, starting downtown and going south, and we'll go through a few movements. Back in the old interchange, imagine coming down Mesaba Avenue and wanting to go to Wisconsin. You'd have to cross three lanes of traffic to take that left exit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So today, rather than that left exit, there will actually be a two-lane right exit. The innermost lane will go up and over I-35 and go up to 535. The rightmost lane will continue going up to Highway 53, okay?
Mm-hmm.
At which point, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know there was a terribly bad blind merge where that movement merged with the traffic coming from Wisconsin going up 53 towards the mall. Big change right there is there will be no merge. They will each have their own lanes.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, okay. What was previously there was like Jersey barriers, and I have a toy. It's called a Miata. It's, you know, was my midlife crisis, my wife says, but whatever. And it's a very, very low car, and people couldn't necessarily see me over those Jersey barriers.
There's no question. When this was built, it had originally what we call more of a post and beam type traffic railing.
Yes, right.
And you could see through them. So in, I think it was around 2010 and 11, we had to bring those up to current standards, which required us to basically have solid concrete in there. And that's when you know, the visibility really became a struggle.
And Miatas were more popular at that point, too.
Yeah, well, ideally, you just, I mean, the good thing here is you won't even have to merge now. They'll each have their own lane and going up 53. Okay, and then the other thing, we get a lot of questions. Why is this such a unique interchange? And the best way I can explain it is back when this was built, this area was a completely different place. There was other industry and additional railroad on the Lincoln Park side. There are a lot of obstacles and challenges that we don't see today that, you know, were the reasons why this interchange was constructed the way it was.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Pat Houston. He's a major projects engineer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And we're talking about reconstructing what has long been known as the Can of Worms interchange of I-35 and I-535 connecting to Superior and Route 53 headed to the range. You mentioned left exits, and I've actually been in the last few months driving a bit more in the Twin Cities and noticed there's quite a few of them down there. Tell me about them, because they at one point seemed to be a norm, and I'm hearing that maybe that's not such a great idea.
I can't speak as a subject matter expert on it. I would just say that at a high level, you know, if we can make something work with a right exit, we will avoid a left exit. And I don't know the particular details down in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming there's, you know, if there's something modern, there's some obstacle that they just couldn't do with the right. But we strive for the right exits because that's kind of the norm around the country, right? People anticipate right exits more than they anticipate left.
Right. I mean, I'm actually familiar with this because we did talk to one of your colleagues a couple of years ago on this project, and the left exits came up, and that may be, now that I think about it, maybe I'm not visiting the cities much more, but I'm just noticing that more ever since left exits were planted in my head, and I keep going, hey, why is this guy hitting me on the left, you know?
Right.
All right.
So let's stick with kind of a rundown. I'm yep. Right in the middle of the new interchange now, and I'm looking, if you can imagine, 53 running up the hill.
Okay.
So imagine you're coming down Highway 53, Piedmont Avenue from the mall, and you want to go south on I-35. That ramp used to merge with traffic coming from Superior going south on 35. That was another very blind merge. Mm-hmm. Those two ramps in the new configuration will not merge together. They will each go to different spots on I-35. We are pulling those two ramps apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of I-35 will continue our trip to the south end of the project. It ends a little south of 27th Avenue West. And for your listeners that have been through here, that new overpass at 27th Avenue West was one of the first pieces of the project we did. And it opened in the spring 2021. So now I'm going to turn around and I'm going to come back on the northbound side and tell you what's different. And I'll repeat a little bit. I'm traveling underneath 27th Avenue West, and now I would like to go to Superior. Mm-hmm. So I will have a right exit, no change there. Remember, we talked about the Green T intersection?
Mm-hmm.
It's a single lane exit, and then it splits the two. So if you stay in the right, you continue just around a ramp and you go to Superior like you always did. If you want to go up Highway 53, Piedmont Avenue, you take the left split in that, and you will come up. There will be a signal. It might be red or green. If it's red, you have to stop.
And that's still part of the right exit, but there's two lanes, and it's the left lane, correct?
Correct.
Theoretically, you could get rid of the signal, right, if you had ramps like going a third story, higher than the other two.
Theoretically, you could. Yes, but they're very costly and also have impacts. So, you know, we're trying to do the right thing here and be efficient and effective. We all pay user fees in terms of gas tax and so forth. So this works.
Right. Well, even just saying what I did there with a third story ramp, I get vertical, and it reminds me of the scene, I'm going to date myself, from the Blues Brothers, where they end up on an expressway that goes way up into the sky and it ends. So,
right.
Yeah, you don't want to make one of those.
No, there's a lot of reasons. And it's Minnesota, too. So think about if you've ever been like in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I noticed them down there. They have high speed interchanges with three levels of ramps.
Oh, they do.
And, they do. I mean, from interstate to interstate, you know. Mm-hmm. So they're high speed and they get way up there. But remember, this is northern climate. It's aside from cost and efficiency, I mean, that would be really probably pretty treacherous.
Well, it seriously could be 10 degrees colder when I come down Thompson Hill coming from the Twin Cities to Duluth. Yep. I have actually watched my thermometer in my car say 60 degrees, 58, 56, 52. Yep. You know, and by the time I get to 27th Avenue, it's easily 10 degrees cooler. So, and in fact, all joking aside, that probably isn't very good for your car to suddenly go through that. So, all right. Once again, we are speaking with Pat Houston. He's a major projects engineer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. We're talking about reconstructing what has long been known as the Can of Worms Interchange. Maybe you might want to come up with a new name, by the way, of I-35 and 535 in Duluth, connecting to Superior. So I think we got a review and the final price tag.
Well, before we get to that, do we have a little more time to talk about the rest of the project?
Sure, yep.
So the piece of work we're doing right now, for those that have been through, is the main core of the interchange. And we actually call it the Twin Ports Interchange now, even though it probably always be the can of worms to most of us. So there's two other big components of work. Number one is the 535 Garfield Interchange down by the Blotnick Bridge that's supposed to be part of this project, as well as the bridges going up Highway 53, both at the end of their life. And to meet the project goals, we need to do all this work, especially for the freight component and the service life. They're at the end of their life. So those are both going to be added. We'll start in a week or so. Those were both components in the original scope of the project, but we had to defer them due to lack of budget. So that means there will be a lot more activity. So specifically, the bridges going up right through Lincoln Park till they meet Piedmont Avenue will be completely demolished and reconstructed. And as well as the interchange down in Garfield and 535, those are important for a couple of reasons. Number one, you mentioned the big loads coming out of the port. And actually, there are overweight loads that are legal overweights with permits all the time. But in particular, the big wind cargo that's really been rolling through the port the last couple of years, typically they're going to the Dakotas. They can't get on the interstate because those bridges down by Garfield and 535 are restricted for loads. And then when they got to the old Can of Worms interchange, either due to the load rating or load capacity or the geometry, they couldn't get through there.
Yeah, windmill blades don't fit easily underneath those bridges. And I've actually wanted to follow them to see actually how they get to wherever they're going.
Well, and the generators are very, very heavy, and these are very large trucks. So when we're done with all of this, they will be able to get on the interstate, but not until we get that Garfield 535 and the main Twin Ports interchange done. So the other difference you'll see is, if you can think of, as you look around, interstate that was constructed in the late 60s through the 70s, it's not overly attractive. Not that an interstate has to be attractive, but as a part of our National Environmental Policy Act, we had a visual quality committee for this. So you'll see kind of a nod towards the Lincoln Park motif with arches and brick, and not a high level of detail out on the main interstate because, of course, that's high speed traffic, but we'll carry some of those shapes. But when we get to the Highway 53 bridges that are right in the middle of Lincoln Park, those will be a little higher level of detail, and they'll be very nice looking structures. And so you'll get kind of a glimpse if you drive by 27th Avenue West, that's only half completed in the concrete finishing and painting, but half of it's got all the paint and the architectural finish on it, so it'd be a much nicer looking interstate.
All right. And so the total price tag is?
So we have to break that up, Robin. So the existing work being done right now on the main interchange, the construction cost in round numbers is about $277 million. The additional work, which we executed a contract for last Friday, we added Highway 53 bridges, and they connect the main interchange to Highway 53 or Piedmont Avenue. And we also added the reconstruction of the interchange down at Garfield and 535. And that contract for all that work is $158 million for a new total of $435 million construction cost. Completion date, most of the main interstate I-35 will be done like fall 23, but not all the movements will be open And the reason they won't be open is because we won't have 53 or 535, the two other pieces of work done. Mm-hmm. So the Highway 53 bridges will have all traffic movements open to about November of 24.
Okay.
And down at Garfield 535, we'll have all traffic movements open November of 23.
All right. And by the way, in the meantime, I'm sure everybody who's trying to get to or from Superior knows this already, but the alternative route is the Bong Bridge, which in fact has temporarily the 535 designation on it, correct?
That's our formal detour, although it seems like, I can tell you on Garfield Avenue right now, in the morning and in the afternoon commutes, the traffic volumes are up by a factor of 3. So we really have some challenges. The port traffic, trucks and so forth, are having a hard time getting in on the port. So we ask people, I know it's really not too far around, but we're trying to lighten the traffic load on Garfield.
Right, by sending people along the Bong.
Correct.
Where can we find out more information or refresh what we just learned?
If anybody's looking for additional information, it's really easy to web search Twin Ports Interchange and MnDOT. We have a couple of actually still cameras out there. You can see what's going on there. They zoom in really well, and there's also quite a few pictures and informational videos on the website as well.
All right. What's the URL one more time?
It's easier just to do a web search for Twin Ports Interchange and MnDOT. You'll find it.
Okay. We've been speaking with Pat Houston. He's a major projects engineer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. We've been talking about reconstructing, well, I'm not even, should I say can of worms anymore, because it would be something better. How about that? The interchange of I-35 and I-535 in Duluth and connecting also to Route 53. Thank you for joining us, Pat.
You're welcome.
You have completed the can of worms update. The reconstructed roadway to your destination is 1 to 2 years away.
Coming up, Tom and Debbie King sing about our area's natural beauty.
Superior, our shining sea, our lake, our home, our friend. Superior, tranquility, where beauty never ends. Your wave-tossed cliffs and rocky shores have shaped our memory. I am mother.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you're like many residents of our area, you live here because of the outdoor life. And you probably tell people that all the time when they ask you, why do you live up there? Well, our next guest has made a point and career of telling that story in song. Tom and Deborah King have been creating and performing instrumentals, vocals, poems, and even raps about the area to share and teach the culture of Lake Superior, its history, its critters, and of course, the weather. They'll be performing as Hawborn at Lucius Woods in Solon Springs tomorrow, and Tom joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Tom King.
Hey, Robin.
So did I pronounce that right? And I actually made a point of not pronouncing it definitively, so you could correct me. Hawborn or Hawbjorn? It's spelled yep. Hawbjorn, right?
Yep, it's H-A-L-L-B-J-O-R-N. So the J is kind of like a Y, so it's Hawbjorn. Hawbjorn.
Hawbjorn, okay.
It means rock bearer in Icelandic.
Rock bearer, aha. So how much of Hawbjorn, what rocks are you talking about up here?
Well, our little sheep farm is located on Rockmont Road. On the South Range, we look out over Lake Superior and the Duluth and Superior harbors and the skylines. And so our first ram, who was the father and the grandfather of all of our other sheep who have come since, we named him because he was black and kind of looked like a little bear. He was Hawbjorn, so rock bear.
All right, I'll go with that. How much of Hawbjorn is Deborah and Thomas, you and your wife? But I suppose I should point out before we answer that question, Deborah is not with us today because she's lost her voice.
Yeah, that's right. She's temporarily voiceless.
But we'll be back tomorrow for a performance again at Lucius Woods.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, it's the dock concerts on the lake. We're one of the groups playing on the various docks on the north part of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Music on the Docks.
All right. So again, how much of Hovbjorn is the two of you, and how much is something else?
Well, I do most of the writing, and we are very much words forward. Debbie absolutely collaborates with that. We have had fantastic help and support, and still do, from Keith Giannis from the Twin Cities. He lives in Minneapolis, and also Nick Glass, both of them who play just about anything, but mainly they serve as our bassists. So Debbie and I are the main energy behind it, and then Keith Giannis and Nick Glass are greatly helpful, and we love working with them when we can get them. They have busy lives too, but they are surely part of this.
Mm-hmm. And what were you doing before you were Hovbjorn?
Before we were Hovbjorn, we did individual performances. We've composed music and recorded things probably for the last several decades. Both of us are retired university people, so we had rather busy lives. But when our kids were young and with our grandkids and so forth, we did some of that. And then in 2008, we met Keith. And then shortly after that, met Nick, and we're able to gel things together into an actual performing act. We've also had wonderful help from Carol Donahue. Carol is a very accomplished organist and musician, and Carol has helped us greatly in things like transcription and arrangement. So Carol, Nick, and Keith have definitely been and still are folks that we depend on a lot.
Mm-hmm. And is your repertoire all about the area, or do you go further afield?
Well, for the most part, we do it just as you introduced there. We create songs, rhymes, hymns, poems, instrumentals.
And raps, you said, yes.
And raps, absolutely. I'm just itching to show you one or two of those here. But yes, we're interested in what happens outdoors. Most instrumentalists or vocalists don't really compose or sing about things that happen in the external world outside of our buildings and homes. And so that's kind of our focus. We involve certainly people and relationships and such, but we're mostly talking about it in regard to life outdoors.
Well, rather than talking about it, let's hear some of it. How about a signature song for some of that outdoor activity?
One that Debbie sings, which is just beautiful, and I wrote it purposely for her in 2007 and 8, is Mother of the Waters. Mother of the Waters is for Earth. It's for the planet Earth. And we wrote it we performed at our Coppertop Church in Duluth for Earth Day.
All right. Well, let's hear Mother of the Waters by Hovbjorn, Tom and Debbie King.
I am mother of the waters, I am sister of the sun. I have birthed your sons and daughters, I have borne you every one. My love is great, it will not end, my limits have no name. I am mother of the waters, I hold all of you the same. I am mother of the waters, my grandeur knows no bounds. My life is poured for all to have on green or barren ground. My love is large, my patience pure, my depths not fully found. Mother of the waters, stand on me your sacred ground. I am mother of the waters, my rules will never bend. I am all that you can make of me, your home, your life, your friend. I try so to forgive for all that's done so carelessly. I am mother of the waters, gently be and care for me. I am mother of the waters, I am earth, your only home. I am mother of the mountains and the skies that eagles roam. I eyes seem so large, my sphere is great, so wide and far to view. I am mother of the waters, care for me as I for you. I am mother of the waters, care for me as I for you.
And that was Mother of the Waters by Hawbjorn, Tom and Debbie King.
Yeah, and Nick Glass was playing bass on that.
And we are speaking with Tom King. Deborah has a bit of voice recovery she's getting over. Well enough to perform tomorrow at Lucius Woods in Solon Springs.
At the end of the season, Robin, the folks who run the Lucius Woods concert series a few years ago came up with the idea of let's have bands on various docks around the north end of the lake so that people can canoe or kayak or pontoon boat or whatever you want to do around the north end of the lake and get a sampling of different performances. So we're on one of the docks up there from 7 till 8 p.m. on Saturday night, and it's just fun.
Right. What could be better than hearing Mother of the Waters, as we just did, on the dock at Lucius Woods? So is your music onomatopoeic, can I put it that way? Which is to say, does it evoke nature or other subjects that you write about, or just talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the spoken word art, some of the poems or the short essays do indeed involve terms like plunk, or the hook from the your hook from the trout fishing line goes into the water, and but mostly we use descriptive words and phrasing, and we try to have the music that underlies it move with the words, so that the words and the music are conveying similar mood or similar feeling.
Mm-hmm. Any particular example of that you'd like to share?
Anthem for Lake Superior is a beautiful folk hymn that we wrote again for Lake Superior Day, and we've performed it a few times in Duluth, and it's one to be sung by a group of people. It's essentially a hymn that you would sing in a gathering of people. The transitions, the progressions that we have in there really do give you the chills, just a little bit.
Well, Lake Superior is very good at giving you the chills, even in August when we get way water temperature all the way up to maybe 41 degrees. So at that, let's hear the anthem for Lake Superior by Tom and Debbie King, the duo behind Hawbjorn, who will be performing at Lucius Woods in Sylvan Springs tomorrow.
Superior, our shining sea, our lake, our cliffs and rocky shores have shaped our memory. Your storm-crossed days and churning bays, so grand, so wild to see. Superior, Superior, may memories ever be of greatest lake and open skies. Superior shining sea, Superior, our shining sea, our grandest lake of all. Yes, even when we've traveled far, we hear your beckoning call. You've summoned us from distant shores. Superior day, we hold our lake so dear. Superior, our shining sea, you shape our lives each day. We honor you, we trust in you, with gratitude we pray. Superior, our shining sea, bring. Superior, so blessed are we, your grandeur we will sing. Your towering waves and deep
And that was the anthem for Lake Superior, You Could Feel How Cold It Was, by Tom and Debbie King, the duo behind Hawbjorn, performing at Lucius Woods in Solent Springs tomorrow. We mentioned poetry and rap. Tell me about it. Give the example of this rap business.
All right.
I have to say, I haven't heard of Lake Superior rap yet.
Well, you're going to hear TikTok rap right now. So the TikTok rap. When you're out in the bush and find yourself stuck in the grass and the sticks or in the wet muck, keep your sleeves rolled down and all buttoned up with your pants and your socks. Yeah, do the tick-tuck, tick-tuck, tick-tuck. The tick-tuck is quick and easy to do. Just put on repellent, use a spray or goo, then pull down your sleeves and pull your socks up. Before you know it, you'll do the tick-tuck, tick-tuck, tick-tuck. Ticks live on the ground under leaf litter. They like to crawl up. They're sneaky little critters. So put on the goo that makes them go, and then you won't see them because you'll know the tick-tuck, tick-tuck. Tick-tucking seems silly. It can look that way, but keeping ticks off your skin is a super good way to keep from getting sick, very sick sometime. So remember tick-tuck with this goofy rhyme. Tick-tuck, tick-tuck, because you won't be laughing if you get lime. Tick-tuck, tick-tuck, yeah, tick-tuck.
Well, you know, through the magic of radio and the internet, I just had to sneak in some percussion behind that. It's a group called Wax Lyricists, High on Loungin', and I think it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Debbie does. She puts the percussion behind that.
All right. That was, what's your rap name? TikTok Master King? There you go.
Yeah.
Half of Tom and Debbie King performing tomorrow night at Lucius Woods in Solent Springs. Tell us where we can find more about your music.
Well, we are, our website is Hallbjorn, Hallbjorn.com, Hallbjorn.com. And right now, that's pretty much it. We have some of our stuff up on there. Both of us have just come through major efforts with new books we've created. We are also writers. I write textbooks and also fiction and other things. And Debbie is coming out with her first excellent memoir here from Wisconsin Writers Association Press. And we've been so busy for the last 12 years or so with book projects, we haven't expanded our social media beyond our Hallbjorn.com website. But that's the easiest way. And then also you can just email us off of the site.
All right. How about a song? You can get back to a song, by the way. You don't have to do another rap to take us out.
Watchers in the Woods. Watchers in the Woods is a story told by an Ojibwe elder to me about wolves.
Okay. And here is Watchers in the Woods, again, by Hallbjorn. We've been speaking with Tom King. Our good well wishes to Debbie King, who, of course, will be in perfect condition tomorrow as your performance at Lucius Woods. Thank you for joining us, Tom.
All right. Thank you, Robin.
Ontario, each shore is distant from each shore. The snow was deep, the ice was weak, yet winter was no more. Springtime melted, started open, ice should not be crossed. Fur trap lines were his living, precious pelts could not be lost. They would watch him going home. Haul on ice from cabin to the lake. He'd pull his trap line in before his family was awake. Beavers in his traps he found, he pulled them through the snow. The watchers in the woods all saw as they watched him go. They would watch him going home. Beavers out, far movements in his eye. Five wolves crept in from nearby woods, they would not let him by. So he hiked on to a distant shore, more than an hour's roam. The wolves stayed close behind him, growling as he wandered home. They would watch him going home. Steered him from behind. He looked out over Long Lake now, stunned at what he'd find. The
plate, ice in front, had opened wide, a sure fall to his death. Wolves guided him the long way round with growls and with their breath. They had watched him safely home. Beavers out, their pelts were hung to dry. He knew wise wolves had saved his life, a gift he would supply. On fresh pine boughs out in the woods he placed the beaver's flesh, offerings for wolves who'd saved him from an icy death. They had watched him safely home. They had watched him to his home. They had watched him going home. Now they will watch him going home.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, Tuesday was election day, mostly primaries, but there was a more decisive vote in Two Harbors.
Yes, there was. After 7 months of controversy, Two Harbors residents voted to recall embattled Mayor Chris Swanson on Tuesday night, ending his nearly six-year run as mayor. An unofficial tally of both in-person and absentee ballots, with 100% of precincts reporting, show that 86% of voters voted to recall Swanson, with 1,149 voting yes to recall him and only 180 voting no to keep him in office, according to the Minnesota Secretary of State website. The question on the ballot was, shall Mayor Christopher Swanson be recalled? Now, there are about 2,215 registered voters in Two Harbors. Todd Ronning, who's the chair of the Resign or Recall Committee, said the group couldn't be more happy with the results. According to the Two Harbors City Charter, the next step is that the council president will take over mayoral duties and a special election will be held during the next general election to fill the remainder of Swanson's term, which expires January 2025. Ben Redden is the council president. Recall efforts were spurred by Swanson's underwater hotel and cryptocurrency pursuits in January, which brought a slew of other potential conflicts of interest and ethical concerns to the surface. Reviews of his actions have found he violated the city's code of communications policy and was less than forthcoming with potential interests. Swanson has maintained he's done nothing wrong and refused to resign, even after the city council voted 6-0 in June asking him to. He did not attend a regularly scheduled council meeting from mid-June until this past Monday. The Resign or Recall Committee began collecting signatures to move the recall forward in March. It needed 20% or 498 signatures of the city's registered voters to sign the petition. It first gathered nearly 1,000 signatures, 735 of which were verified by the city. But the committee withdrew its petition because it had told people the signatures would be private, and it learned later that that would not be the case. In the second round of signatures garnered 618 signers, 532 of which were verified by the city. A lawsuit seeking to nullify the recall effort, which is brought forward by a supporter of Swanson against the city and the recall committee, was dismissed in June.
All right. Well, back to those primaries. There was a hotly contested one in Duluth.
Yes. Alicia Kozlowski, a community relations officer for the city of Duluth, is running for public office for the first time, and she put together an impressive campaign for a political newcomer, landing the official DFL endorsement, headed into the primary election night that pitted her against Duluth City Council President Eric Forsman for Minnesota House District 8B. And on Tuesday, Kozlowski won the DFL primary and will now face Republican candidate Becky Hall, a former economic development specialist who is running for the seat again after previously losing. Kozlowski received 3,616 votes to Forsman's 2,817. Beating him with 56% support to his 44%. Both Kozlowski and Forsman were jockeying to run in place of party incumbent Representative Jen Schultz, who chose not to seek a fifth term in the legislature, opting instead to run for Congress against Pete Stauber. The District 8B seat represents the eastern portion of Duluth. Kozlowski was born and raised in Duluth, the daughter of an Ojibwe mother and a Mexican father. She is a first-generation college graduate with a bachelor's degree from the University of Minnesota Duluth and a master's degree in business administration from the College of St. Scholastica.
All right. Well, Danny, in Wisconsin, the Republican side was busy on primary day.
That's right. In the 73rd district, voters will decide between two women in the November election to fill an open seat in the Wisconsin Assembly. Angie Sapik of Lake Nebagamon won the Republican primary Tuesday with 58% of the vote, defeating Scott Lustre of Lakeside, according to unofficial results. Sapik will face Democrat Laura Gapsky of Superior in the November general election. Gapsky didn't have a primary challenge for the seat currently held by South Range Democrat Nick Milroy, who decided not to seek re-election this year. And in the 74th Assembly District, voters will have a choice between two men for an open seat in November after Representative Beth Myers decided not to run for re-election. Democrat John Adams, a farmer and political organizer from Washburn, is seeking a seat in the Wisconsin Assembly and was running unopposed. Chans Green of Grandview will be the Republican nominee to face Adams on November 8th, and he took 67.5% of the vote over his Republican challenger, John Shea of Glidden.
All right. And there was also contention at the Superior School Board meeting this week.
That's right. Dozens of community members urged the Superior School Board to keep a curriculum in place that teaches fifth grade students about gender identity. They spoke out before the school board on Monday as the district is considering an appeal to a complaint filed by a group of parents who oppose that curriculum. The group is taking aim at a 30-minute lesson plan on gender identity, and they wanted to see it offered as something parents could opt into for their children. Under current state law, no students are required to take any such instruction, but parents have to opt out of it or file a written request that their student be exempted from the curriculum. And the majority of people who spoke at the board meeting were in favor of this lesson plan. They say it fosters an atmosphere of inclusion and will keep students safe as they attend the district. And, you know, students, educators, and parents noted that LGBTQ students are at risk of self-harm or suicide due to bullying or stereotypes from their peers. A minority of parents and educators who spoke said that the curriculum is being passed off as fact when they say it's a philosophy or a theory being put forward with those who have a political agenda. They say it alienates or attacks students, teachers, and parents who have religious beliefs that don't align with that curriculum. The district is reviewing the appeal, and a meeting will be held at a future date yet to be determined.
All right. Well, Rick, back on the Minnesota side, there was another school board development, a long-awaited one.
Yes, it was. Duluth Public School leaders agreed Monday night to sell Central High School up on the hill for $8 million. Now, this is the Central High School is commonly called New Central, not the old historical Central School building downtown Duluth. School board members voted unanimously to sell the property to Chester Creek View LLC for slightly higher than the $7.9 million for which it was listed. Superintendent John Magus, in a statement after the meeting, said that he's very pleased the district is moving forward with the sale of Central High School for more than the asking price. He also said that it will be helpful in providing additional resources to the students and families of the school district and be a wonderful development opportunity for the city of Duluth. The building, which sits at 800 East Central Entrance and has been dormant since it was closed as part of the district's red plan, is already on its way out. Crews are removing asbestos from inside and will demolish the building this fall. The newly approved sale doesn't apply to the entire school grounds, however. School leaders are holding on to about 22 acres worth of property at the school site, on which the district is currently building a new headquarters and other central buildings. Now, this was the fourth formal attempt to sell the building since school officials mothballed it. A $10 million deal with Harbor Bay Real Estate Advisors fell through due to cost concerns in 2015. Board members nixed a $14.2 million sale to Tisher Creek Building Company in 2016 for a Duluth Edison Charter High School, and a $7.4 million sale to Saturday Properties fell through last fall.
All right. We've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Tom and Debbie King as Hobbyhorn. Stay safe, everyone.
There's a trail up north called Degerman Road. Winter days are cold on Degerman Road. And when the north wind blows, that is where a lost soul goes. There is fear upon the snows down Degerman Road. Josh was loading logs down Degerman Road. Was that the cold wind's cry down Degerman Road? Was it wolf or was it man? Josh heard it and he ran. Winter skies were indigo down Degerman Road.